Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Deborah Martinez. Today we're going to talk about behavioral health. Over a dozen behavioral health providers who serve some of New Mexico's most vulnerable patients are transitioning to management by Arizona firms after a state audit found evidence of fraud and mismanagement. On the KUNM Call-In Show today, we'll take a look at how this transition is going so far. Joining us this morning are Paul Weeks and Kit Harris of Valencia County Counseling Service in Los Lunas, and Dan Ranieri of La Frontera, one of the Arizona behavioral health providers who will be taking over operations in a few minutes at some of the other providers. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Diana McWilliams as well from the New Mexico Behavioral Health Collaborative. Welcome to all of you, Dan and Paul and Kit.
Thank you.
So let's start with Paul. Paul, I spoke with several of your colleagues at Valencia Counseling Service last week. Looks like spirits are kind of low there. You heard in a feature I produced last night. What are you seeing on the ground?
Spirits are low. That's true. Many of us are unsure of what's coming next. Many of us are worried about our clients. I took a brief survey at one of our treatment teams. I asked my colleagues how many people are going to stick around, and all of us are unsure if we're going to stick around, but at least 3 out of 8 are unsure.
That's right. And we already have people that have found jobs elsewhere. A very valuable therapist, bilingual substance abuse counselor.
She's
has moved on.
Wonderful therapist.
And why is that? Why is she moving on?
She's been working with this company, for the Valencia Counseling Services, for most of her life, or most of her counseling career. And she's put her time and energy and soul into this work, and she's not so sure about giving her time and energy to a company out of Arizona.
Mm-hmm. She's distrustful of outsiders coming in, which I think is pretty evident with a lot of the counselors and staff at Valencia Counseling, as well as clients.
You told me you're a family there.
We're definitely a family.
Close family.
From Sam down to the maintenance. We cook together. We eat lunch together sometimes. Clients know everybody. They walk in, they see a front desk person. They know her.
Yes.
They sometimes hug her because she's familiar to them. My kids ask who my boss is. Is he that kind of old guy with gray hair? I said, yeah, that's him. They know him.
He kind of looks like Einstein.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Sam Vigila is the CEO of the company, and he is not going to be staying on. That is the plan of the company, is to remove all of the top management, and they say they're rehiring everyone else who wants to stay on. So how are you working to ensure that your clients are continuing to get the care that they need through this transition, Paul?
I plan to do whatever I can to make the transition as smooth as possible. I don't feel like I've got many options. I do care about what happens to the clients that I've established a relationship with. Relationship in therapy is the essential. Jung calls it the alpha and omega of therapy, the relationship. It is really scary transition. And as much as I can, I'm going to, if I'm hired by the Arizona company, I would go along with them at least
this
temporarily.
This is news and music that connect from the...
Sorry about that. Go on.
That's it. I plan to work in whatever way to make the transition easy, and if that means moving, being hired, seeking employment through the Arizona company, that's what I'll do.
Your client's interest is what you're most interested in.
That's the priority.
Well, to our listeners, are you a provider or a client of one of the affected behavioral health providers here in New Mexico? How has the state's decision to freeze Medicaid funding affected you? We'd like to hear from you right now. Call 277-5866, or if you're out of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866. Those numbers are also online at kunm.org. If you didn't get them, you can also email callinshow@kunm.org or post your comment online there. And now let's hear from Dan Ranieri of La Frontera, the organization based in Tucson. You've been providing behavioral health services now for 42 years, you told me, Dan, and you have a transition team of 3 to 5 people here for 30 facilities. Who are you working with here, and how's the reception been for you?
Well, the transition team actually at any point in time is about 20 to 25 people, and they'll be involved until the transition's done. Ultimately, we'll probably have 3 to 5 people who stay. The transition, there have been bumps in the road, obviously, some that we've anticipated, some that we hadn't. But all in all, it's gone fairly smoothly, much more so than I think I would have anticipated. We've fully transitioned one organization in Las Cruces. We're in the process of transitioning 3 more right now. Have already had multiple meetings with the leadership of those organizations. And we'll be transitioning a couple more within the next week or so.
What are some of the challenges you've been facing? I know that the pharmacy that you took over in Las Cruces area closed down for a little bit because you realized you didn't have a license down there.
Well, closed for an hour.
Mm-hmm. And then you got an emergency license from the state?
An emergency license, yeah. So the impact on that was fairly minimal, fortunately. Things are done a little differently in terms of pharmacies in New Mexico than they are in Arizona. And so some of the things we kind of find out on the fly, and that was especially true with Southwest because that was the first organization that we transitioned. The biggest hurdles that we encountered was there were no computers or computer system because those are not available because they potentially contain evidence.
Oh, so they'd been removed.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So we had no access to any of the computer systems or the records or the schedule. And no access to the medical records. We had to figure out kind of on the fly how we were going to deal with that. Mm-hmm. We've pretty much successfully dealt with that, although we did a lot of scrambling. We now have our computers in our system installed, and people are being trained in that as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
We have access to the records, and as part of our preparation with the other organizations, we're making arrangements to have access to the records prior to actually transitioning.
Okay. Let's pause for a moment. Stay with us, everyone, and I want to take a call from Miriam in Albuquerque. Good morning, Miriam.
Good morning. My comment is that this really has nothing to do with transition. I believe it's a hostile takeover with political implications. And that was planned before audits of these agencies were even completed. And the other thing I would like to say is, even if we assume that there are some problems with people who have served this mental health community for 40 years, it seems to me that there should be a plan to create new systems and at least give providers evidence of what their accusations are for. And the other thing I'd like to say is that now we understand that the company who did what is actually being called an audit, but is really a summary rather than an audit, has proven to have false claims in other states where they have similarly been engaged in takeovers.
Thank you, Miriam, for that call. We don't have a representative from the Human Services Department here. However, we will have Diana McWilliams of the Behavioral Health Collaborative that oversees behavioral health in New Mexico joining us in just a few minutes. We'll talk with her as well. I want to follow up with Dan about the medical records you mentioned that were missing or that were taken away by the AG, I presume. Where did they tell you that you'd have access to medical records of clients?
Well, what we're doing is as people come in, we're having them sign a release, and then we're having Southwest make copies of critical portions of the chart so that we can start a new chart. Once we got our system installed, all the records are going to be electronic. And we won't take possession of the entire record, but we'll take possession of critical pieces that we need.
So are you having to start from scratch with each client then as to their history?
Not really. I mean, the people who are providing the services are the same people who have always been providing the services, so they have knowledge of them. Also, the pharmacy has records of their medications. So I think for the most part it's a matter of convenience. And it's very inconvenient to have to reconstruct records or make a couple extra phone calls or do some of those type of things. But, you know, for any of us who've done this for a while, we always used to do this sort of stuff. But with electronic records and such, it's been a little easier for us to access things. We're having to back up a little bit until we can get our systems established and kind of make do with what we can get.
Dan, I have a question for you.
Please.
Some of my clients have told me that they don't want their records being moved over to the new Arizona company.
Yeah.
Have you come in contact with that problem?
You know, not that I'm aware of. Obviously, if they don't want to sign a release, then we don't access it. But if they're on medications, we clearly need to get their medication list so that we can, you know, treat them safely and appropriately. And I don't think anybody's had any concerns with that. And, you know, the other part of it is for the clients coming in, they're not dealing with anybody different. Everybody they're dealing with is the same people in the same offices. Nothing's really changed for them other than what they're hearing, the stir that they're hearing. You know, none of them know the CEO, or most of them don't know the CEO. So it hasn't been, at least it's Southwest. It hasn't been a major issue.
Okay.
One of the major issues, however, was staff morale and such, because, you know, it is a family atmosphere, and that's how we run organizations, and we've done a whole lot with our staff to try to preserve that.
What have you done?
Well, you know, our staff that we have on the ground spend a lot of time with people, you know, trying to be supportive as we can. There to answer their questions. I met with the staff at Southwest for 3 hours, essentially telling them that their jobs are safe. There was a rumor that their jobs were only safe for 90 days, and that's not true. At least it's not true with us. Also, I assured them that they had not done anything wrong, that they're not being accused of anything. At least in our eyes, they're not. We wouldn't have hired everybody if we thought that were the case. But they were making some mistakes that we were going to help correct.
Mm-hmm. However, the audit summary does say some of the records were not being kept accurately, and the people that keep those records of notes
therapists.
And such are the therapists on the front lines.
But
so you're retraining?
Well,
or?
And that is true, because I've seen clinical processes, and I've seen some things that were not done according to the regulations. But they didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
These are complex regulations. And there's certain things you can do and certain things you can't do. And those things have changed substantially over time. And we've lived that for 15 years. And a lot of things that I'm saying are similar to how we were documenting and how things were being done in Arizona 15 years ago.
Okay. So it sounds like some of the transition involves the IT system, too, that Optum Health, who oversees these providers, implemented a year ago, just about the time they started seeing irregularities. Let me ask the callers again to give us a call, and I'll give you the numbers. If you have been affected by this issue, if you have family or friends involved in the behavioral health community, 277-5866. Toll free, the number is 877-899-5866. And again, those numbers are on KUNM.org. We have a call from Santa Fe from Nat. Nat, good morning.
Hi. When the show opened, I just have to take issue with the comment that was made that there's evidence of fraud. And my issue is that it's alleged evidence of fraud.
Good point.
That's right.
It's still alleged. And I think that's really important as we look at this. And I think that the disruption of behavioral health services affects the most vulnerable segment of our population, and will trickle down to all of the other services and supports for everyone. And behavioral health patient-provider relationships are the most delicate and fragile partnerships there are in healthcare. I believe that we're not teetering on a cliff, but we're shifting to a crisis within our state. And I was wondering if you have access to one of the contracts between the state of New Mexico and our Human Services Department and one of the Arizona providers, La Frontera Center Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. It was signed by the HSD Cabinet Secretary in late June, HSD Office of General Counsel in mid-June. It looks like HSD Chief Financial Officer. It looks like it was signed in May. Could just be that we can't read their handwriting. And then the president and CEO of La Frontera, Daniel Ranieri, it looks like it was signed in May. And then Tax and Rev signed it June 27th. The reimbursed fees and costs run executive director $300 an hour, chief operations officer $275, chief financial officer $275. This is per hour. Manager $250, mm-hmm. associate manager $200, business analyst $200, systems analyst $250, transition consultant $250, clinical right. leadership $250, clinical trainers $200. And it's just, this contract is just real scary because it looks like from this evidence that it was signed in March and June, and this was handed out by Senator Linda Lopez at the Legislative Health and Human Services meeting where we were going to be discussing what's going on for 50 minutes, and it was 5.5 hours on July 25th at the Capitol.
Thanks, Nat, for your call. We're going to, I'm sorry we only have a few minutes in an hour to talk about all the various aspects of this, but I appreciate you sharing the contract you apparently got a hold of, I guess you said from Senator Lopez. With some of those numbers, I did ask HSD about those salaries, and they said that they wouldn't be as high as 200 to 300 within a few weeks. Within 90 days is what I was told, they would be reduced. And so perhaps our next guest who joins us here in just a moment, Diana McWilliams, the interim director of the New Mexico Behavioral Health Collaborative, will be able to address that question. It is 8:21. This is KUNM, and we are talking today about behavioral health. If you'd like to join the conversation, 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. We'll be right back.
New Mexico Community Foundation uses philanthropy to address statewide issues, from building rural economies and promoting Native American leadership to ensuring equality for women and girls. NMCF builds relationships with community leaders, businesses, nonprofits, donors, and financial advisors to create greater opportunity and prosperity and build a thriving New Mexico. More information at nmcf.org. That's nmcf.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Community Foundation.
We have to make it real that people can take the leap and afford it.
Hear from Ellen Bravo, Executive Director of Family Values at Work, as well as the stories of two women whose lives have been impacted by workplace policies.
My husband was able to take a few weeks off to be with me during Joey's recovery, but he had to return to work because we had to keep our heads above water.
Join us this Friday morning for Well Woman Radio at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
And we're back in Studio A, KUNM Studios, here on the campus of the University of New Mexico. And I'm Deborah Martinez, talking today about New Mexico's behavioral health community and the collaborative that was formed several years ago to manage all aspects of behavioral health. Some 19 agencies meet regularly as members of the collaborative. The interim director, the acting director of that organization, is Diana McWilliams, who joins us now on the line from Santa Fe. Good morning, Diana.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. Well, there's been quite a bit of criticism of the decision to bring in Arizona contractors, such as Mr. Ranieri's group, to take over the administration of New Mexico's behavioral health providers. And some of those have been serving local communities for decades here, as you well know. Can you give us some insight into how the decision was made?
Sure. Our first priority is always absolutely consumer safety. And in this situation as well, it was protecting dollars and protecting consumer safety. So certainly with consumer continuity of care being the most important thing, we wanted to make sure that, staff, Peter was mentioning earlier, I caught the first part of the show where, you know, he's very concerned because he knows that that client relationship is so important, and we agree that's paramount. So when we were looking potentially for a worst case scenario of having to transition a provider, an existing agency, based on the initial information we had before even the audit was on the ground, we had to do emergency planning. We couldn't just sit back and say, well, we'll wait for the data. And so we had to have a contingency plan. And we certainly did talk to La Frontera and at the time also Southwest Behavioral Health Services, two very large organizations behavioral health organizations, nonprofits in Arizona. Arizona is ranked number 7 in terms of outcomes from a Kaiser report with regard to health care.
Is that why you chose Arizona providers and not any in New Mexico or other states?
Well, we looked, frankly, the New Mexico providers didn't have the footprint, so didn't have the financial capacity. We certainly have some wonderful wisdom and some great folks that are providing services, very good services as well as running great agencies, and we are going to look to them to help. But bottom line is, with the emergency situation that we thought might be before us, we needed to make sure that continuity of care was absolutely going to be continuous and that folks were going to be safe.
Okay. Diana, I have a question for you from Kit here. Kit Harris, a social worker working at a counseling service in Los Lunas, Valencia Counseling Service.
So, I mean, considering the impact that this has had on the behavioral health community, what I don't understand is how come the agencies were not given a chance to remedy whatever errors were happening, or none of the agencies except for a couple were granted good cause exceptions, and we all applied. It's a very broad impact, and it seems to me you should go to the less impactful first, which is to change some of the ways we're doing things.
Sure, Kit, that's a great question. And bottom line is, with regard to the claims errors and those types of things, that absolutely is what we want to work and give support for clinicians as well as staff that that are in charge of intake for consumers coming through the doors, all that stuff. So technical assistance is definitely at the forefront of this. What happened though was that the actual credible allegations of fraud that we were looking at looked like it was top management. It was questionable business practices and relationships that looked like it benefited top management. And there was also whistleblower information with regard to major concerns for consumer safety, but it didn't point to staff that were on the ground necessarily meeting with consumers and clients. It was pointing to management. So that's where we did not, once we saw that there was credible allegations of fraud, we could not say, well, we'll figure this out later and work on this later. It was when we talked to the AG's office and they accepted all of them, then it's almost like a light switch goes off. We can't talk about those allegations, even if they're probable or even if they're fixable over time. We cannot talk about that. And
okay.
That's frustrating. That really is.
Thank you, Diana. And we're going to take a call now from Ellen in Santa Fe, a behavioral health practitioner. Good morning, Ellen.
Hi. I don't want to repeat. I agree a lot with what Nat and Miriam said. And, we won't know the truth until the audit is published. But as a behavioral health practitioner of 38 years, I was just stunned by the process, which violates every tenet of providing psychotherapy. We know that we have some of the highest social indicators in New Mexico for social problems, addiction, alcoholism, domestic violence. These populations, as somebody already said, are incredibly vulnerable. So you come in and rip the services away from people. I have to tell you, I smelled a rat from the beginning because of the level of corruption we already have in our state and many other agencies. But my biggest question is, where are these funds coming from to pay Arizona providers when our own behavioral health infrastructure is so underfunded?
So, Ellen, also great questions, and I understand your passion and your concern. So I'm going to certainly try to address everything that you're saying. Bottom line is services are not being cut, absolutely not being cut. We are making every effort. Actually, most of the dollars that we have that are going out to the agencies right now are to cover payroll. We are making sure that existing providers, so existing clinicians, psychiatrists, community support workers are all getting paid, and even their operational costs are keeping the lights on. So it's for the existing services and the existing operations on the ground in every community that's affected by this.
Diana,
so I wanted to be clear about that. Secondly, mm-hmm. the actual the money with regard to the agencies, the what was being quoted earlier, those hourly rates, they are for staff, consultants basically, to come in and help with system setup, help with process setup, get folks hired on and get them settled. So that's not all the operational stuff moving forward. It's actually getting folks on the ground so that people are safe.
And Diana, regarding these contracts, they're temporary, right? You
yes.
said they were emergency contracts. They end in
yes.
December. So when can we expect to see the RFP for the contracts starting in January when, of course, everyone knows Medicaid expansion kicks in and 137,000 more people will be enrolled in New Mexico in Medicaid services for a total of 717,000. When will that RFP go out, or has it?
Well, actually, how managed care works, and Centennial Care has both physical health and behavioral health in it. And basically, the four managed care organizations that were awarded the Centennial Care contract back in January of this year will be right now contracting with all of the agencies for physical health as well as behavioral health on the ground right now as we speak. So there's no RFP from the state to say, okay, behavioral health providers, you have to, submit a request for proposal. They work with those four managed care organizations to stay in their network and actually provide the services. And they're part of our entire healthcare system.
So that's
what we're looking.
So they'll be permanent then. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
So it's not temporary.
The contract with regard to transition and getting them set up with that the person earlier was quoting the dollar amounts, the mm-hmm. hourly dollar amounts mm-hmm. For consulting services is not permanent. That is only a transition contract with the Human Services Department, and that's it.
So when they contract with the
totally is our healthcare system.
So when they join the MCOs
right.
overseeing them, they will make less money per hour?
Oh, absolutely. They would make whatever is on their 990s as part of their operational stuff, which is their 990s, I'm sorry, is their tax. You can look that up online on GuideStar.org and look up online the agencies and what the executive directors and the CEOs are paid.
Okay.
And you can do that even for the existing agencies that are, were part of the audit. Anybody, any nonprofit nationwide, you can look that up.
Okay. And let's go now to Taos, where we'll hear from Charlie, who's concerned. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm going to just give a quick statement that my wife and I have been guardians of a young lady who has had behavioral problems that we've had to deal with the agencies directly.
Are you treatment foster care parents?
Although this girl ended up in treatment foster care, but we went through the counseling services,
mm-hmm.
and she's been a chronic runaway. And I'm just going to briefly say that New Mexico has some of the worst laws in the country regarding parental rights dealing with runaway children. But at any rate, this entire switchover to out-of-state companies to run New Mexico operations just doesn't seem right at all. If you're going to base things on rankings, how does an Arizona ranking of seventh in the country help anything when New Mexico businesses would need the support to become higher in the rankings as opposed to withdrawing all funding to these outfits and putting power into the hands of out-of-state operations dealing with New Mexico residents? I'll leave that as my statement.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Charlie, and thank you for taking care of that child. Let's go to a call in Albuquerque now from Anita about the Arizona providers. Anita, good morning.
Yes, along the same lines with Arizona providers coming in, I know that Sam, that's the CEO of Valencia Counseling, started that business because he is passionate about helping people in his community. And I'm just concerned about the lack of cultural sensitivity that's going to occur when an Arizona company comes in, because cultural sensitivity does go top down, so it will affect our clients.
Yeah, I think Dan Ranieri might have the answer to that question. So hang on, and if you have another question, we'll be right with you again. So Dan,
I didn't hear her answer the question about who was paying for the executives.
Well, I can tell you what HSD told me, which we asked a representative to be on today, but they were unable to join us. What I was told was that I forgot her question.
The issue about cultural sensitivity. Yeah.
Well, that's for you. Go ahead, Dan, and answer that, and I'll.
Well, I mean, we think that's critical, and you know that obviously begins with the culture of the organization. And what I can tell you is La Frontera has a pretty strong national reputation in that area. In fact, we wrote and published and have reprinted four times an organizational assessment guide related to cultural sensitivity and cultural competence. And we take that very seriously, and that began prior to my stay in La Frontera, and I've been there 19 years. But essentially the things that we look at from an outcome standpoint is the penetration or the percentage of diversity we have among our clientele. First, you have to get people in the door. We look at the diversity of our staff. And in Arizona, the diversity of our staff matches the diversity of our clientele, not only at entry-level positions but throughout the organization. And finally, outcomes, clinical outcomes. We have a clinical evaluation and applied research department. We do outcome studies on all of our clients every year and have done it for years. And one of the things we look at is the percentage of folks who remain in treatment, complete it, which is critical to success and outcomes. And what we found over the years, bar none, is that there are no differences by race, gender, or ethnicity in terms of treatment completion or treatment outcome.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead. Kit Harris of...
But there are differences between cultural sensitivity in Arizona and in New Mexico, and even in Valencia County. We're a very rural county.
Yep.
I think that there's definitely unique differences in both places.
Yep.
What do you see, Kit, then, are you talking about
the generational
addictions and
not only that, but I mean the ruralness of it. I mean someone from Vegeta has a really hard time making it into our office. If they don't come one day, are they going to? I mean, it can be really hard for people to get to us.
Transportation is very, very difficult.
But it's we who work there, from the CEO down, we understand that. Sam's known that community. He knows the intricacies of where Vegeta is and Meadow Lake is. And that's different from everywhere else in New Mexico and in Arizona.
I would like to add to that Valencia Counseling Service also realized that transportation was a problem in Valencia Counseling in Valencia County. So we started a rapid ride service for our clients, and that lasted. It was wonderful. It lasted for 4 months, and of course, funding was cut.
Was that state funding?
It was state funding.
Mm, okay. Well, Dan, are you looking at something like that, instituting or reinstituting some kinds of transportation services that could help get these folks in rural areas to counselors or telehealth?
Yeah. Well, the telehealth piece, yes, and that actually is in place. Our game plan at first is to assure transition of the staff, make sure staff are hired, people don't miss paychecks, to ensure continuity of care so people aren't missing appointments, they're not inconvenienced related to that. Then we'll look at structural things that we need to do to make sure that the business operations are intact and the organizations can survive and improve. And then we look at all the different things that are in place and what are the areas that that need improvement that we can affect that change. So all those things will be discussed. Right now, it's basically continuity of care and continuity of staff. That's our primary agenda item right now.
Okay, Dan, thank you.
All those things will be looked at.
Okay, and the caller earlier had a question about where the money came from, and what the spokesman for HSD told me was that they moved money from a category called other in the budget, HSD budget, to contracts. And that is done within state government quite frequently, especially at the end of fiscal years. So it's not uncommon to hear about that kind of move of money. We have callers who've been so patient waiting. Thank you so much. In Taos, we have Karen, who has some comments. Karen?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this show. And I have to say, this is one of the most astounding things I've ever experienced. I have a Down syndrome boy who received fantastic services from Casa de Corazon. On Wednesday, July 3rd, I got a text message saying, last day with Danny from my absolutely wonderful provider, funding cut, call Casa.
And so actually, if I can just interrupt you, Karen, funding was not cut. We covered their payroll. So
Monday, I had no provider. No, you did not cover their payroll.
We did. We had some folks that have at agencies that were calling, you know, consumers and families saying that there's no more services, and that was just not true. We covered payroll. And that was just not the case that those were cut. So I'm sorry, Karen, you experienced that situation, because that was not we cut a check to that organization.
I know there were
And what I don't understand is that it seems the cart is before the horse. It's guilty. It's as though you're acting as all 15 behavioral providers are guilty before they're proven innocent. You have trashed every single behavioral provider that have long roots, like trees growing deep roots of trust and confidence in the community. And you have instantly trashed them before there is any word out as to what they have done wrong. And how that's even legal, I don't even understand. But you are viewed with huge distrust all throughout the state now, as though you are acting like criminals. After Public Consulting Group trashed services in North Carolina and was found out to be millions and millions of dollars off in what they estimated the fraud to be, and it's a still undisclosed amount of the percentage of what they claim the fraud to be, and they're getting paid
not
from
true.
That.
I'm sorry to interrupt,
so
you, but a lot of it
do
is
not understand
true.
Why you go to this completely unreliable company. You have your contracts in place in March and June, so you're completely acting as though every single person who has been devoted their entire lives to caring for our children are criminals.
Okay, Karen.
And you install these for-profit companies. I learned from Ben Lucan.
They're all nonprofits. They're all
Karen.
$13.8 billion. You're installing these corporations in our small little communities.
Karen,
thank
you.
That have our trust.
Thanks, Karen, for your call. I can see you have a lot of passion about the issue, and I appreciate your call today. Diana, I know you've tried to interject some comments there. Is there anything else you wanted to add in response to Karen's call?
Sure. as impassioned as she is, and I totally respect that, and I respect her anger. I understand the uncertainty that was caused by a lot of rumor that all of it is untrue is hard.
Well, however,
very hard to deal with. So.
But Diana, you do know that the behavioral management service folks, the frontline folks, were furloughed for a time and then laid off.
And
so that did
cause. And how that happened, they were not working in the summer anyway. So the furlough, they weren't working in the summer. So there's a lot of misinformation.
Well, I spoke to some people that were working, though, and they were furloughed up in Espanola and worked in
Taos. We covered payroll, Deborah, and we also reached out to every agency. They have a responsibility as part of their Medicaid provider agreement to give 30 days notice if they think there's going to be a continuity of care problem or a service problem.
And what is HSD's or the Behavioral Health Collaborative's responsibility as to giving them notice before they cut off funding?
So when the funding was cut off, we basically told them, all of them at once, saying, you need to let us know now if when there's going to be a problem for meeting payroll. So bottom line is, we wanted to make sure that we were covering payroll immediately if we needed to, which we did with Southwest Counseling Center, as well as organized Casa de Corazon, and which is their umbrella is Santa Maria El Mirador. So,
okay.
So bottom line is, we have a lot of the monies that budget adjustment was done for is to cover salaries, is to cover the direct care providers. We're very concerned about ensuring that the consumer safety is number one, and that's why those monies were moved around.
But there was some disruption of service.
And the disruption of service was not caused by us not giving money. It was caused by the agency not talking to us and just doing whatever they wanted to do, unfortunately, which was ended up scaring people, which I was very frustrating.
Well, they heard that they weren't going to get any more Medicaid funding, and
they had direct access to us, Deborah, and we were reaching out to them.
But they didn't get funding for their billing. Their billing stopped, so they had funds outstanding.
But I understand the fear. If you're responsible, though, for folks, and you're going to be a Medicaid provider, and you're going to run a large agency, reacting in that way is irresponsible. It really is. They needed to contact us, which is what they were instructed to do, and they did not do that.
Okay. Let's take a call from Linda in, I think, Rio Rancho. Good morning, Linda. Are you there?
I just wonder why no one has mentioned the possibility of this being a political move by Susana Martinez's office. I believe that she has something to do with the fact that she wanted to pad her coffers for national aspirations by awarding Arizona contractors this job. And I totally agree with the last caller that this is guilty before even proven guilty. And, I just think it's political, and I think it has to do with Susana Martinez wanting to, be in bed with Arizona contractors and CEOs.
Diana, of the Behavioral Health Collaborative, can you stay with us for the last few minutes of the show?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. And let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to ask you to follow up on that caller's question. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Santa Fe Art Institute presents Art History Memory, Artistic Practice in an Age of Ongoing Colonialisms, a lecture by Dylan Miner on August 12, 6 p.m. at SFAI. Miner's talk opens his exhibition, Native Kids Ride Bikes. He collaborated with local youth to share traditional knowledge and local history while encouraging healthy lifestyles and sustainable modes of transportation. More at sfai.org or 505-424-5050. A message from the tax-exempt SFAI.
On the next, Making Contact.
I'm here because the United States invaded my country in 1965.
It's not just jobs and prosperity that draw immigrants to the United States. Many Latin Americans were brought here by dangerous or deadly conditions, and the U.S. often had a role in creating those crises. Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
I'm Deborah Martinez. On the call-in show this morning, we are discussing behavioral health and the current situation with 15 providers who are accused of fraud and mismanagement. There is, by the way, a district court case pending in Albuquerque Second Judicial District Court about this case by 8 providers. And we asked several of those to appear with us today, but they declined on the advice of their attorney. So I want to encourage callers to still call us if you can, if you would like, in these last few minutes, and be brief if you could, 277-5866 or 877-899-5866. And Diana, you were going to answer the comment from the caller in Rio Rancho.
Sure. How can this be politically driven when we found $36 million worth of really fraudulent claims, potentially fraudulently billed claims, as well as improper business relationships, as well as whistleblower activity that really hurts consumer safety? And when the Attorney General's office accepted all of it, and the Attorney General's office has been working with us on this project for and been aware of it for the last 6 months, over 6 months.
Let me ask you about public.
And there were zero political contributions from any of the any of the agencies.
Let me ask you about public consulting group, though. They did have that audit in North Carolina that was blasted by the auditor there, that only 2% of the alleged mismanagement fraud actually did exist.
Actually,
so I
Deborah,
think you can understand why there is this
that was actually
skepticism.
Taken out of context. That statement that you just said is not true.
I've read it over and over, though.
But it's not true. And actually, the North Carolina auditor is from my understanding, was frustrated that that happened, and she is working on getting another statement
she
out.
She was quoted, though.
Bottom line is, what that was is Public Consulting Group, which they're still a contractor and still doing projects with North Carolina. Their audit revealed a certain dollar amount, and bottom line is the auditor was correcting or reprimanding the administration for not recouping those dollars. So that's when it came down to the $2 million or whatever that ended up being identified to be recouped. That's just what they did recoup. And so it was taken out of context. Public Consulting Group has not been disparaged by North Carolina's auditor, and she was very concerned that her discussion was taken out of context.
Well, she was quoted, so I suppose you're saying she backed off of those statements now. So let's take another call from Lori, who's been waiting a while in Albuquerque. You have an employee affected by behavioral health or working in the business?
Yes, thank you. So I guess our concern as employees, and I know numerous employees, we're currently going through, well, I mean, we're going to call it what it is, it's a takeover. And the lack of preparation from the Arizona company that's taken over this particular agency, it's unbelievable. If they knew the possibility that this was going to happen, they should have had much more planning in place and a strategic alignment with whether it's HSD, whoever. But the employees now, of course, they've all been, will be laid off as of Friday. And then,
Lori, what agency are you with?
It's with Whole Goddess.
Actually, they are not being laid off. They're having a job fair right now on Wednesday, yesterday,
and
today.
And the process was a nightmare. They weren't prepared. They didn't have answers to most, pretty much the four people for 200-plus employees, mind you, didn't have answers. They didn't have even a remote.
Were they able
it
to apply?
There was a lot of I don't know, I don't know. Well, what's our pay? I don't know. What's this, what's the leave going to look like? Is everything going to be the same? I don't know. Anything that's going to affect directly an employee, basically it was I think the script was I don't know. I think that's what they were given for every other.
I think, Lori, what's disturbing to me is that when I speak to other employees, because I've been on the ground as well, they are saying it's going well. So if you had a specific issue, you can contact me directly, and I can work through that with you. I'm happy to do that.
I'd like to bring Kit in, Kit Harris of Valencia Counseling, to talk about some chat she's heard on Facebook.
Yeah, I have several friends at Whole Goddess who have also said that the process of having to re-interview for a job they've already had for several years is very frustrating, which is also something I have a concern about. I have to re-interview for a job I've had. And that feels insulting to me, and I don't know how it would feel to you or to Dan to have to re-interview for a job you've had.
Okay. Let's take a call from Santa Fe and Kate, who's holding. Why are they still What is your question, Kate?
Well, I have several other things I'd like to have said, but since time is running short, I just want to say, as a person with bipolar disorder, I'm not a Medicaid client, but I can't imagine how I think this has been poorly handled. I mean, the rollout of this, the questions, the hissy fits of the secretary in front of the legislature. I mean, we're talking about very vulnerable people and their families, and, you know, the disruption is abhorrent. But the real question that I have is, it's my understanding that some of these same agencies that have been alleged to have committed all this fraud in their Medicaid billing are still providing other Medicaid services. For instance, Easter Seals El Mirador is still providing services under Medicaid for developmental disabilities, and these are the same physical location, the same management team, the same administrative and billing staff. Is that true?
Diana, can you answer that?
They are at this point in time, and the audit did not cover that part of their business. So other than that, I have no comment on it.
But they were cut off and then restored, right? They were given a reprieve after they were completely cut off. A couple weeks after.
Basically that, yes, initially once all the payment holds went in place, but for that side of their business, the department did lift the pay hold on that to, again, ensure continuity of care and consumer safety.
Paul, what are the next steps for you in your work as a counselor of 6 years in Valencia County?
Good question. The next step is to definitely work with the clients to make sure that the transition or takeover, whatever word we want to use for that, goes as smoothly as possible and continue the care, very good client care.
Are you hearing from clients, I'm not going to come anymore?
I've heard that from clients.
How do you reassure them?
I reassure them by saying that basically that Arizona is not my employer, that you, the client, is my employer, and then I'm working for you through this, with you through this. And that is reassuring, of course.
And Kit, what are you telling your patients? And their kids, a lot of kids.
I have a lot of kids, and I tell them that, there's a lot of uncertainty, but I will make sure that they get the care as well. But I also want to show them that I won't sit back and let things happen when they're unjust. And so it's kind of a learning experience for everybody. And they also have choices.
Yes.
Okay. We just have 1 minute. I want to take one more call from Nancy, who's been waiting and in Albuquerque. Go ahead, Nancy. Are you still there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, good morning. I know there's already been comments about hostile takeovers and this kind of thing, so I won't repeat that. However, I just have a question on your panel. Had you thought about having somebody other than Diana McWilliams, who is the architect and the guy from La Fonteta, who represents some of the provider community in New Mexico, to also be on there so that there was could be a response from that aspect?
Yes, I mentioned that I asked several provider executive folks to be on, and because there is a pending lawsuit in district court against the state of New Mexico and the Susana Martinez administration, they declined to come on. I'm presuming they don't want to try their case in the media. And I want to thank everybody who's been participating in this lively discussion today. It's been certainly very interesting. Dan Ranieri in Tucson, the CEO of one of the new providers, La Frontera, thank you for joining me from there. And Diana McWilliams, the acting head of the Behavioral Health Collaborative, overseeing behavioral health in New Mexico. I wish we could have heard from HSD, the secretary, or one of her folks, but they declined. And I want to thank the Kellogg Foundation, the McCune Foundation, the Frost Foundation, and the Quinalma Health Foundation. Those are KUNM's poverty and public health funders. We appreciate their support. Visit us online at KUNM.org. Click under News. There's a feature there about Valencia Counseling Services. I want to thank the technical supporters here, Andy Lyman, Michael Hess, Steve Emmons, and the engineer, Roman Garcia, Marshall Broyles, as well, and our executive producer, Elaine Baumgartel. I'm Deborah Martinez. Thank you for participating. Have a great day.